And I'm going to read Tradition 11, the long form. Tradition 11 states, our relations with the general public should be characterized by personal anonymity. We think AA ought to avoid sensational advertising. Our names and pictures as AA members ought not be broadcast, filmed, or publicly printed. Our public relations should be guided by the principle of attraction rather than promotion. There is never need to praise ourselves. We feel it better to let our friends recommend us. And that's Tradition 11. And I give you Carrie B. from Bend, Oregon to talk to us about Tradition 11 this evening. Thank you, Carrie, for being with us.
Thank you so much, Dee. My name is Carrie and I am an alcoholic. Nice to see you guys. My home group is the New Horizons group. I have one home group because I respect the traditions and the concepts. I am one among many. And I have a sponsor who has a sponsor. And I sponsor women who sponsor women. And Tradition 11, and I love the long form that Dee just read. I love it. There has been, however, a lot of additional Tradition 11 information and literature written since those first long form and short form were written, because we have new avenues of breaking this tradition, right? Of violating this tradition. The internet, for one, right? The internet is a good way of maybe stepping outside the guidelines. If I don't know what I'm doing, if I don't have a clear understanding of this tradition, you know, for a long time, I thought that this was the anonymity tradition. That's what everybody calls the Tradition 11. I didn't realize that, no, that's Tradition 12. Tradition 12 is the one that starts our anonymity is the spiritual foundation of all our traditions, yada, yada. Tradition 11 is our public relation policy. It's how we relate to the public. So for a long time, I thought, because I heard things in meetings and within my friends' groups and stuff, like, I can break my own anonymity all I want. I just can't break your anonymity, right? Like, everybody knew I was a drunk. I don't care if they know I'm sober, right? And so I thought that that's what it meant for a long time. And then when I was finally, somebody finally taught me, no, Carrie, let's read the black words on the white page, right? And let's not try to read between the black words. So what this tradition tells me, even in the short form, I mean, it's really simple. I don't know how I missed it all these years. It tells me that this tradition isn't anything that has to do with your with keeping your anonymity. This tradition is saying that I need to maintain my personal anonymity, personal anonymity at the level of press, radio, and films. Well, what do you mean? I thought that this tradition protected me from, you know, alcoholic shame and stigma. No, that's not what it's for. It's not to protect Carrie. It's to protect AA from Carrie. It's to protect the fellowship from me putting some bumper sticker, some soberlicious bumper sticker, or if it works, it works if you work it on my car and driving around town flipping people off. Like, I can't be the spokesperson for Alcoholics Anonymous, whether self-appointed or otherwise. You know, when I post my coin on Facebook, and by the way, no, technically, posting, you know, IV or VI or V, a Roman numeral on my Facebook page, technically, that does not break this tradition, right? We're finding loopholes, but let me break this to you first and foremost. If you're trying to find a loophole in a spiritual principle, you probably have bigger issues than the 12 traditions to look at. So I'm not going to talk about the loopholes. Okay. We all know what VI means. It means, look at me. I just celebrated 4 years of sobriety. I want to see how many likes I can get and how many people congratulate me, right? Now, that bleeds a little bit into Tradition 12, because tradition 12 is the one that talks about personal sacrifice. I have to sacrifice my personal ambition, right, for the common good, which is I have to sacrifice, look at me, look at me, look how good I'm doing, look what I just did, for keeping this thing anonymous and keeping my face off of AA, right? So what does tradition 11 mean? Well, it's our public relation policy. Again, it's how we relate with the public. So I don't know how many tradition studies I've been in when we start talking about tradition 11 and all of a sudden somebody's talking about breaking their anonymity to the homeless person in the park or to their doctor or whatever. And it's like, that's not public. That's not even, that has nothing to do with this tradition, right? So I'm going to read something out of the 12 traditions illustrated, which I love. It says, alcoholics who have recovered, ED, through our program are themselves the strongest attraction that AA has. When people are asked what led them to seek AA help, the answer given is often mostly an AA member. Their chances would have been slim if all of us remained completely in hiding. But many of us have chosen to tell our friends, neighbors, employers, coworkers, doctors, spiritual advisors that we're in AA. And when we do so, we are not breaking our anonymity in the meaning of this tradition, right? That's what this says. Suppose a sick alcoholic never has the good fortune of meeting an AA. How is such a person going to find us? The search would be difficult if the group itself thinks that it should be anonymous too. The tradition is talking about my personal anonymity. And personal is in italics here. Remember, alcoholics will not be attracted to AA if they don't know that it exists or if they have a distorted or unfavorable impression of its members or programs. Giving the general public an accurate picture of AA is the chief job of our public information committees. So this is their policy, our public information committee's policies on how much to share, right? And basically, we're not a secret society. We can get out there in the public and say, hey, AA is here. We just can't say, hey, I'm in AA and we're here, right? So we can have a billboard. We can have a PSA. That sounds like a public service announcement, which a lot of people call commercials. Those things are great, so long as they don't have a member's first and last name or a face attached to it, right? That's the policy. And this is a tradition I'm actually comfortable in because it's black and white. And I'm not too comfortable in the gray area for anybody who knows me. I like black and white. I like, this is what you do. This is what you don't do. Here's the line. Right. And that's what this tradition offers me. So in addition, they often carry the message to certain groups from police officers to personal directors, those whose work includes contact with active alcoholics. So I always thought, like I said, that tradition 11 was to protect me, was so that when I'm in the grocery store, I don't see John Doe and he says, hey, Carrie, I saw you in the meeting last night. Hi. That's what I thought tradition 11 was. And that is the anonymity that our namesake, that is where our name came from. These traditions didn't come until 10 years after the name of our fellowship was created. This is our public relation policy. It's not about breaking each other's anonymity in the store. Obviously, that's called, that's half of our name. Of course, we don't want to do that. That's called trust. That's like, if you're breaking anonymity of somebody else, you got some steps to work, buddy. But this tradition is about our public relation policy and anonymity and going into a tradition 12 a little bit. Now, listen to this. I love this. This is in Comes of Age, AA Comes of Age, page 43. If it were really guided, okay, I'm going to start from the beginning. On Sunday morning, the last day of the convention, I found those 12 traditions still on my mind. Each of them I saw was an exercise in humility that can guard us in everyday AA affairs and protect us from ourselves, right? If an AA were really guided by 12 traditions, we could not possibly be split apart by politics, religion, money, or by some old timer who might take notion to be big shots. With none of us throwing our weight around in public, nobody could possibly exploit AA for personal advantage, that's for sure. For the first time, I saw AA's anonymity for what it really is. And I say what it really is in that voice because it's in italics. It isn't just something to save us from alcoholic shame and stigma. Its deeper purpose is to actually keep those fool egos of ours from running hog wild after money and public fame at AA's expense. It really means personal and group sacrifice for the benefit of all AA. Right then, I resolved to learn the 12 traditions by heart, just as I had learned the 12 steps. If every AA did the same thing and really soaked up these principles, we drunks could hang together forever. I love tradition 11. Like I said, I didn't always, and even after I finally understood what it meant and the difference between what it does mean and what it doesn't mean, right? Even after I understood that, I still didn't like it and I still didn't agree with it. But remember in tradition 9, where the book says, well, at first we followed these principles because we had to, because of peer pressure, other AAs would like tell us to get out, right? And then we started following the traditions because we genuinely started to understand and want the discipline in our life. Well, I'll tell you about my one experience that I have, because I'm not on in public, you know, I'm not in public all the time on the TV or the radio, or I'm not a movie star or anything like that, right? But I was at the public library, and that's at downtown Bend. That's where all of, like, every time there's, it's that time of year, there's an election coming up, we're going to be voting on different things, right? You'll see a camera crew and people out there with a microphone sometimes, and they'll be saying, hey, do you want to weigh in on measure such and such? And it might surprise some of you to know that I have some opinions on political issues. None of you know what they are because I respect tradition 10 wholeheartedly. But when I'm not in AA, I got some issues. I got some big opinions. I can be pretty political. And so when the guy asked me with the camera crew, if I wanted to weigh in on such and such, and this is an issue that I definitely wanted to weigh in on, then this guy is offering this big mouth a freaking soapbox, right? With a camera and a microphone for the 5 o'clock news. And I'm like, oh yeah, I definitely would like to weigh in on that, right? And then it dawned on me, oh my gosh, I'm wearing an AA Roundup shirt. Now, the Roundup shirt, it didn't say AA. It had a circle and a triangle in the middle of the circle made out of a hammer, a wrench, and a screwdriver. And it said tools of recovery. That was the theme of the Roundup here. Didn't say AA on it. So was there a loophole? Oh yeah, absolutely. If I was practicing the letter of the law instead of the spirit of this of the spiritual tradition, then I could have probably got away with it. But this is the first time I actually sacrificed personal ambition for not what I thought was the common good of AA, but because that's AA's tell me I'm not supposed to, right? I still didn't believe in this tradition. I do today. I believe in the spirit of the tradition. But that was really hard for me to decline with my teeth clenched. I have to decline, sir. Thank you. You know, and I obsessed about it all the way home. I'm not going to lie. You know, I should have, could have, would, I could have turned my shirt inside out. I could have went in the bathroom. And I mean, all these things that I could have done to where I could have given the interview. But the fact is, and I believe that God put me in that situation and gave me that experience, if for no other reason, so that I can share about it in tradition workshops, because it was not fun. I did not leave going, you know, oh, I feel so good about my decision. I didn't, you know, that tradition had not made it from my head to my heart yet. And I did not see where it might hurt AA if I ran my mouth with a Roundup shirt on. But the truth is, even though my Roundup shirt doesn't have the words Alcoholics Anonymous on it, and even though my coin doesn't say Alcoholics Anonymous on it, when I posted on social media, which I used to do for my first couple of years, Those are loopholes. And again, if I'm looking for a loophole in a spiritual principle, I got some other issues. These are spiritual in nature, right? So I have to find that sacrifice. And I have to not stand out. I have to not, I cannot be the face of AA for your guys' sake, not for mine. I mean, for mine too. And we can talk about that when we get into tradition 12, but for your guys' sake in tradition 11, this protects AA from Carrie. One other thing that I was going to say, I want to read to you something that that Dee actually pointed out to me recently that I had to read four times because I couldn't believe Bill Wilson used this type of language, this strong of language, which I can, I mean, because you guys know how I feel about the 12 and 12. No strong language in the 12 and 12, right? It's ought not and suggested. And then the other stuff, you know, comes of age and Dr. Bob and the good old timers and pass it on, which is what I'm going to read out of. It's got some teeth in it. And I've heard people in AA say things like, you know, well, I know that it's not really in alignment with that tradition. And we can be talking about tradition 5. We can be talking about tradition 3. We can be talking about tradition 2. We can be talking about tradition 11, tradition 10, whatever tradition, you fill in the blank. But I've heard people say, I know it's not really in alignment, but if we could even help one alcoholic, if we could save one alcoholic, right? Like take singleness of purpose, for example. How many people have heard of small towns that don't have any Narcotics Anonymous or Cocaine Anonymous or Heroin Anonymous? And the small town people say, well, of course, we're not going to turn away non-alcoholic drug addicts. We're all they have. If we can save one life, I mean, first of all, that's super arrogant. But secondly, like, well, and I guess there will be a third off too, because secondly, that is not the way to save drug addicts. The way to help to save drug addicts is help to start an NA meeting with them. If there's two or more drug addicts in your town, you got a meeting right there. So that's how you do that. But third, you know, the principle has to come before any one individual, before any one life. And I cannot believe that Bill actually said those words in this article. So I'm going to read this page. And this one happens to be about anonymity. So when Time Magazine, this is on page 314, when Time Magazine wanted to put Bill on its cover, that is put the back of his head, okay, not even his face, on the front of the magazine, Bill declined and declined the cover story as well. He reasoned, for all I know, a piece of this sort could have brought AA 1,000 members. Possibly a lot more, he says. Therefore, when I turned down that article, I declined recovery to a lot of alcohol, to an awful lot of alcoholics. Some of these may already be dead. And practically all the rest of them, well, we may suppose are still sick and suffering. Therefore, in a sense, my action has pronounced the death sentence on some drunks and condemned others to a much longer period of illness. But I went well over on the conservative side because the requirements of such a piece would have tended to create a clear and colorful picture, a public image of me as a person. This would have created for the future, I'm sure, a temptation in our power driving people to get like pieces presently with full names and pictures. For this reason, here we go. Here's my final highlight. I estimated that it would be better for some to die and others to suffer, rather than to set such a perilous precedent. Therefore, I declined the publicity, and I must confess, it wasn't easy. If that is not spiritual sacrifice, I don't know what is. And if Bill would have said, I could have gotten 1,000 alcoholics sober, the arrogance in that I wouldn't have known as arrogance, today I can see as arrogance because of later writing that Bill did. You know, it's not up to me to find loopholes in these traditions. It's not up to me to say, well, you know, my case is different because our town doesn't have NA. My case is different because I wasn't really showing my face in that magazine article. My case is different because in my case, you know, no, these are spiritual principles. I either live within these guidelines or I don't. I either make these sacrifices for the good of Alcoholics Anonymous as a whole, or I don't. In the 12 and 12 on tradition 11 essay, one of my favorite lines is toward the end of this. Is toward the, actually it's the last line of the chapter. It's on page 183. This in brief is the process by which AA's Tradition 11 was constructed. To us, however, it represents far more than a sound public relation policy. It's more than a denial of self-seeking. This tradition is a constant and practical reminder that personal ambition has no place in AA. In it, each member becomes an active guardian of our fellowship, not just the GSRs, each member. You know, in the AA group pamphlet, it talks about the GSR being the guardian of the traditions. The 12 and 12 essay talks about each member becoming an active guardian of these traditions. And I think that's the highest level of AA you can get. You know, if you never become a GSR, if you never become a DCM, a delegate, an active guardian, a member among members, somebody who can sacrifice personal and group for the good of all AA is what I strive to be. That's what I strive to grow toward. Those are my ideals that I hope that I can, that I hope that I can achieve. One last thing. The GSO guidelines on Facebook, on social media, you can print those out. I'm going to put a copy in the chat. They read, so how many people here are in secret private Facebook groups? And, you know, we're in a secret private Facebook group, right? So we can talk AA because it's secret and it's private, right? It's not secret and it's not private if you have non-alcoholics in the group, okay? The guidelines make clear that a secret private Facebook group with AAs and NAs and Al-Anons, that's public because that's not a closed Facebook group. That's open to, so all addictions, all different 12-step fellowships is not keeping within the AA tradition. It reads the GSO guidelines in keeping with the 11th tradition, not to disclose AA membership on social networking sites unless composed solely of AA members and password protected. So the groups that I'm in that that somebody can't just add me to, right? They add me to, and then I get asked this question automatically. And the questions that come up are, do you have a genuine alcoholic history? The question that comes up is, do you have a home group in Alcoholics Anonymous? Like these things, you know, are asking if I'm an actual AA member or if I'm just a member of the recovery community, because it's not the same. And so I need to make sure that when I'm going and running my mouth on social media about Alcoholics Anonymous, that I am in a group composed solely of AA members, not just of the recovery community. And so I just wanted to make sure to fit that in because the guidelines are super important. And I love all of the work that's been put into those guidelines. So I posted a link in the chat. Thank you so much.
Oh, thank you so much, Carrie. And that was Tradition 11. Next, we have Concept 11. While the trustees hold final responsibility for AA's World Service Administration, they should always have the assistance of the best possible standing committees, corporate service directors, executives, staffs, and consultants. Therefore, the composition of these underlying committees and service boards, the personal qualifications of their members, the manner of their induction into service, the systems of their rotation, the way in which they are related to each other, the special rights and duties of our executives, staff, and consultants, together with a proper basis for the financial compensation of these special workers, will always be matters for serious care and concern. In Concept 11, I give you Billy N. here from Palm Beach Gardens in Florida. Thank you, Billy, for being with us tonight.
Thanks. Hello, everyone. Billy, alcoholic. So Dee just read this concept, and I just want to go over one word. I won't reread the whole thing that she read. But, you know, sometimes in AA, we hear people say, I know less than when I came in. That's one of those things that just sounds good in meetings. But we would hope you know a little bit more. We just would. If we were talking about the big book, if we were talking about helping newcomers, if we were talking about opening up a church, just we would hope you know a little bit more or have a little bit more experience. And the word that I'm going to just talk about right now is the word best, B-E-S-T. And if you look it up in the dictionary, it says most excellent, effective, or desirable type of quality. And I would just pass on to all of you that for any AA job, we want the best. That it is not personal. It is nothing personal. And we should treat all jobs equally. They should be the same. Nobody's skill set is better than another's. Thank God that we all have different skill sets. Imagine we only all had the same, that we were all the best at the same thing. That would not be good. That would not be a good world. That would not be a good AA. It just would not be good. And there's another word that they use in the first paragraph. It says the longtime success of our General Service Board will rest not only on the capabilities of the trustees themselves. It will depend quite as much upon the competent leadership and harmonious association of those non-trustee committee members, corporate service directors, executives and staff members who must actively carry on AA's world services. Competent. That's having the necessary ability, knowledge, or skill. So we're saying best and competent. And there's nothing wrong with that. We should always be looking. And that doesn't mean you need the same skills to be a GSR, to be a delegate, or to be a DCM and be a trustee. Obviously, different skill sets. But one of the worst things that happens in AA is, I call it AA's version of the Lifetime Achievement Award. So if you grew up watching the Emmys and the Oscars and everything else, every once in a while, somebody who everybody thought should have won an Oscar gets a Lifetime Achievement Award. Or thought should have won an Emmy gets a Lifetime Achievement Award. In AA, we call that the following phrase. Oh, it was their time. It was their time means they've held like every single position possible. And because of that, we owe that person to become delegate or trustee. And I would tell you that, in my opinion, humble opinion, the way I read the concept, there is no such thing in AA as it was their time. That we need the best and most competent all the time. The concept, if you read the narrative, goes through a couple of things. It talks about the standing committees. It gives a good description of the nominating committee. I've served as the chair of the trustees nominating committee, and I've served on the trustees nominating committee 3 years. the nominating committee's job is single purpose, succession planning, making sure that we have the best people lined up. Because as I was taught when I became a trustee, my most important job is not being the best trustee ever. My most important job is to constantly be looking behind me as to who could take my place. No different than in the professional world. We call it succession planning. And that's the nominating committee's job, to work out policies and procedures for how we nominate trustees and directors and appointed committee members, and how we hire employees and the general manager and the chair of the general service board. It goes on and talks about the finance and budget committee and the public information committee and the literature committee. And then it talks a lot about the general policy committee, which doesn't even exist anymore, which I would argue should come back. I believe very strongly the communication problems that we've had would have been made a little better if we had a general policy committee. Right now, it's so easy. Remember, there's only 8 trustees out of 21 who are on the 2 corporate boards. 9 sometimes, if we count the Class A with the grapevine most times. And on the corporate boards, those regional trustees only serve 2 years. They're in and out. Only 2 trustees on each of the corporate boards serve usually 7 to 8 years. 4 years as a trustee and 3 or 4 years as a director, usually a non-trustee director. But they're the people who are supposed to keep the General Service Board informed of what's going on at the corporate board levels. It talks about rotation of GSO employees. When I first got active in service, GSO employees, the staff with a capital S, the AA staff members, rotated every year, not every 2. Every 2 has only come in since I've been active in service. But we really rotate and we take it seriously. We don't want anyone to become the corrections expert or the PI expert. And when we say rotate, let's face it, you know what year it is. It's 2021. You don't need to change offices to change phone numbers anymore. You haven't had need to do that in like 20 years. But the employees switch offices, pack up their office, and move into another. That's how serious rotation is. The only time limit we put on a job is general manager. In the offer letter for general manager, we say we would like the job limited to 7 years. Although we don't have the person sign a contract, and they are what's called in New York an employee at will. But we tell them we would prefer 5 to 7 years because we don't want anyone becoming the face of Alcoholics Anonymous. But we need the best general managers and the best staff members and the best appointed committee members and the best Class A trustees and the best Class B trustees. That's who we need. It talks about the separation of the grapevine and the general service and AA World Services. This was written at a much different time when the grapevine subscribers were double what they are today. I'm not coming out and saying get rid of the grapevine board. I do think there's room for movement. I think there's room to have a different structure. If you were a corporation, just think about how you would look at it. Just compare AAWS to AA Grapevine. AAWS deals with a budget of around $15 million a year between publishing, and services. The Grapevine deals with 60,000 subscribers that were 120,000 when I got sober. Do we need the same size board to run each company? I just throw that question out there. Do we need to spend the same money to fly the same amount of people in all the time for a company that is 1/8 the size? I ask myself questions like that all the time. But I think that's for future generations of servants to really weigh out. The sticky wicket has always been editorial freedom. Let the Grapevine have editorial freedom. I'd like to think there's a way we could have editorial freedom and maybe restructure a little bit. But just so you know how long it takes us to take any of Bill's suggestions, on page 53, there's a sentence that says, joint arrangements, it's a paragraph, it's the two-third full paragraph. Joint arrangements between the AA Grapevine and AA World Services for routine operations such as billing, mailing, et cetera, are not necessarily precluded, though to a lesser degree, the same kind of frictions above described can be expected to develop unless there is the clearest possible understanding of who controls what and when. So that's published in 1961, what I just read. I was a member of the first special ad hoc committee of the joint AA World Services AA Grapevine subcommittee in 2009. And what I read to you was published in 1961. I was the representative from AAWS and Albin Z, who recently retired as the Grapevine editor, but was a past trustee and non-trustee director on Grapevine. Do you know me and him would meet for lunch? We worked 20 blocks away from each other in New York City. We would meet at this dive bar, believe it or not, that had good hamburgers. And we would have lunch usually once a month. And we would look at each other like, how crazy is it? Like, people actually treated us badly because we were on this committee representing each side to find ways to work together and be more cooperative. It really blew my mind. But today I am happy to report that there are joint arrangements between the AA Grapevine and AA World Services for routine operations such as billing, mailing, and other things. Thank God. We don't need to flush AA money down the toilet. And I think the AA Grapevine and their editorial freedom is just as strong now as it was. That committee worked between 2009 and 2012. I give Ward a lot of credit. He was a General Service Board chair at the time, and he formed that committee. And there were some people not happy. Some people liked that it was very, very separate. It goes on to talk about our paid workers and our executives and how much freedom they need to do their job. If you happen to ever get on one of the boards, or you get on a charity board or something, I would just strongly recommend a book called Boards That Make a Difference by Dr. Carver. It is such a good book about board guidance and leadership, and also a book called Servant Leadership. I can't believe that guy's name, there's a organization after his name, is leaving me now. But the one thing it stresses about paid workers, and I've been to many regional forums as a trustee and a director, and I've heard people ask, well, you pay them too much money, or I want to know what their salary is. And my question would be, do I get to ask everyone who comes to the regional forum what your salary is? That's not their AA service. That's their job. And we're their employer. And we don't get to treat them badly or better just because we're AA. We need to treat them like any other employer would, probably better. There's a line here that says, another mistaken idea is that our paid workers should labor cheaply, just as charity workers often do elsewhere. But thank God it says above, we believe that each paid executive, staff member, or consultant should be recompensed in reasonable relation to the value of his or her similar services or abilities in the commercial world. So, these questions about paying our employees, they all live in arguably the second or third most expensive place in America to live. Now, you could come back and say, well, we should move the office. I would honestly tell you, maybe we should. I'm not saying we should, but I am a person who believes we should be open to all ideas. And we should weigh the historical significance of where we are today in New York City to any economic benefit. But I hear so much bad information out there. We pay basically like $24 a square foot for our office because we're in a building that specializes in nonprofits. The average rent for our space in New York City, if we weren't in that building, is like $75 a square foot. Now, I'm not saying there couldn't be economic advantages. There could be. But just coming and shouting things like, well, we don't have to pay them that much. Someone just wrote, Robert Greenleaf, thank you, trusted servant leadership. I'm saying the employees right now are not the ones who decided for the office to be in New York City. That's my point. We did. And as such, we have to recognize that we employ 80 or so people in the second or third most expensive cost of living city in America. And as such, we have to pay them fairly. And it's much more than just the right thing to do. It's about the health of our organization, the emotional health of our employees. You want to treat employees fairly. You want them to want to come to work. You want them to work hard, but you want them to feel that they are well recompensed for working hard. So I just wanted to say that because I hear all kinds of things said around the fellowship. And this is another thing. Only about 20% or less of our employees have to be an alcoholic to work there. 80% is the we don't care rule. They might be a sober alcoholic. They might be a drunk alcoholic. They might be an Al-Anon. They might be in 16 other fellowships. But it's none of our business. It's like your job or my job. It's none of my company's business. So we have about 60 employees or more who are not AA members, who are not alcoholic, but they come to work to do a decent job for us. They're an administrative assistant. They're an editor. They're a translator. They're an IT professional. They're an intellectual property specialist. We have to pay them the same thing we do. And we take this so seriously that we do a compensation study every couple of years. Now, it's easy to find out who the top five employees paid are because the law is you have to put that on your tax return if you're a nonprofit. So people can see what they make. But we do the compensation study to make sure we're not paying our employees too much and to make sure we're not paying them too little. Our compensation experts look at other organizations that are similar to us and looks at the pay scales for the different employees, the CFO, the president or general manager in our case, or the director of services. And we make sure that we're kind of in the middle. That's what we want to tell the IRS every year, that we're in the median range. That's how seriously we take our responsibility to pay our employees fairly. Now, the IRS has a different view. If you're a nonprofit and pay your employees too much, they will come knocking on your door. If you do that study and it shows you pay them way too much, you're going to get some attention from the IRS. So the General Service Board Compensation Committee works really hard with outside consultants to make sure that we're paying our employees fairly. I would say better than fairly, but not too much. So that's it. We can go to questions. Thank you, Dee.
Wonderful. I do have one that came in for concepts for you, Billy, or do you have something, Carrie, you'd like to start off with for traditions? Have you gotten any? Okay. Then I'll start with the one I have. So the question for you, Billy, is on concept 11 on page 53 of the service manual in the concept 11 essay, it states that double-headed management would be a source of continuous conflict. Can this apply to my home group as well?
Yes. It's why we don't like the co-word in AA. Co-chair, co-whatever. Co means no one's responsible. That's what co means. At the end of the day, one single person should be responsible for something, but always report to a group of people that are the ultimate group conscience. Dr. Carver talks about a board of directors should always operate like it only has one employee. In our case, AAWS, the general manager. Yes, we have 80-something employees. We're responsible for making a good, responsible, safe place to work with good benefits and good pay. But when it comes to communication, the board should be communicating to the general manager. And the general manager should be communicating to his direct reports and to the staff. The board shouldn't be getting in the middle of that. Double-headed leadership causes all kinds of issues. And you could have that show up at a district, at an area, or even at a home group. Always best to elect one person and make what they're responsible for clear in some kind of document. Thanks.
Wonderful, thank you. And I do have one for you now, Carrie, as well. And thank you for the question to those that have sent them in. And for those of you that have some, please send them in now. We have reserved those last few moments for questions for Carrie and Billy. So for Carrie, our PICPC, our Public Information and Cooperation with the Professional Community, for those of you, committee has a member of initiatives such as sending information to doctor offices, posting posters on community center bulletin boards, etc. When asking for volunteers, a number of members respond that we are promoting and as such breaking the tradition. How can we best respond to this?
Okay, well, you know, I'm going to steal from Billy. The long form of Tradition 11 uses a phrase. I'm just going to get something that has that. The long form of Tradition 11 says sensational advertising. So why would Bill put the word sensational in there? Why doesn't it just say that we don't advertise? Well, because there's a difference between public information, right? Which would be a billboard. So sensational advertising would be a billboard on the side of the road with a really bad car accident and a half of an alcoholic hanging out of a bloody car with a bottle still in his hand saying alcohol kills, right? AA will save your life. That would be sensational advertising. We're not trying to talk anybody into getting sober. So what public information would be is a billboard simply saying, if you can drink, or if you enjoy drinking and you can, bottoms up. If you want to stop and can't, call AA. And here's our phone number. And it's literally just information. We're not saying, keep coming back. We're not, none of that stuff. We're just saying, here's our information. So there's a difference between, I think, sensational advertising and making sure the public knows where to find us if they need us.
Thank you, Carrie. And
I want to, I have a question. I actually have two from two different people around the same topic, but I want to talk about an experience that I've seen over the last 30 or so years that you don't really see at the general service office level, because at the general service office level, compensation is taken really seriously. But I want to talk about it at a level I've seen at central offices in general and in a groups. Because some people will say, well, I would do this even if you didn't pay me. Or people say, I don't need to get paid that much. But here's the problem with that. My experience is over time, those people will trade off getting paid in money for getting paid in ownership of how things get done. And they start to feel that because they're not paid as much, they might be entitled to more say in how things get done. Or that it's their job, how dare somebody interfere with it. And this is the problem when we don't pay fair, adequate wages, is people start to think, hey, it's my job. You know, I've always said that when I retire, I would like the job at Yankee Stadium spring training of the guy who opens the gate to let the relief pitchers in during the game. It looks like a pretty cool job to me. But I can tell you that I would be willing to do that job for free in retirement, or maybe $5 an hour. But I would, after a certain amount of time, feel like that's not your job, that's mine. And no one gets to interfere with it. And I get to do it for as long as I want, because I did it for so long and you didn't pay me a fair wage. And we never want those issues with paid employees. We want it to be very simple. There should be no gray line whatsoever between service and special worker. It's either something done by a special worker or it's service. It should never be some kind of combination of both. And sometimes when we don't pay someone a fair amount, it starts to look and feel like a combination of, well, I'm kind of an employee, but you don't really pay me enough, so I'm kind of doing service too at the same time. And we should try to stay away from that. Thanks.
Thank you, Billy. I have a question that just came in the chat, and this is to tradition. So I'm going to go ahead and read this, Carrie. Do any of the traditions or literature address our responsibility to protect each other's anonymity? I have a friend in AA whose alcoholism was shared with her boss by another alcoholic in AA. That breaks my heart. That's for you, Carrie.
Yeah, we have a lot, actually. The pamphlet on anonymity is a great one that addresses that. And then we also have these little anonymity cards. They're like this big, I have them everywhere. And you can actually email me and I'll, your mailing address, and I'll send you a stack of them, because personally I don't like them, but they address that too. I could send you the ones that I have. I would have worded things differently, but it does, it is very clear on that particular type of thing. So I think those are probably why those cards were made, for that reason. But yeah, we have a lot of literature that addresses our name. It's half of our name, you know. We want to make sure that our members are safe, and that they're not exposed, and that they're alcoholics, which is the other half of our name that people tend to want to erase, both parts of our name. We're supposed to be anonymous alcoholics. I have a few questions, actually.
Wonderful. Go ahead, Sydney.
In my district, there is a Facebook private page, not a secret one. How would I best address this issue? With tact and grace, I mean, always, obviously, but I don't really know. So there's a difference between, and I understand what you're saying, private page and a secret one. And, you know, the settings on Facebook are changing all the time, but the good news is they're changing for the better. It's locking things down tighter rather than opening things up. Yeah, you definitely don't want it to be a searchable Facebook group, because when you can search it, you can see who the admins are. And if it's connected to AA, even if the members are hidden, you can still see who the admins are. And unless you have a fake account to be an admin, it's not within our traditions. So, and I do have a printout. These are really old. I made them like 6 years ago. Deborah, could you mute my friend? I made these really a long time ago, but here's one. This is Facebook fellowshipping part one. And then I'll put up the part two. I'm searching for it right now. Next time Billy goes to answer a question.
Thank you. And we'll also be talking about tradition 12 next week for the person that asked. So we'll talk a little more on that for you. Billy, what do you have? Oh, you're muted. You don't have any questions?
I still have a few if you want me
to. I have no more.
Okay.
Oh, okay. Go ahead, Carrie.
Okay. How does one distinguish attraction from promotion? In prayer and meditation, in thoughtful contemplation, in prayerful consideration. Actually, you know, there's some questions, a checklist on the link that I posted, the very first link that I posted, that's the GSO guidelines. And there's some really cool questions, like I don't have those questions memorized, but I think one of them is, am I posting this for personal gain or praise? You know, stuff like that. I think that those are some simple little inventory questions that you can ask yourself. But for me, attraction from promotion, in the meaning of tradition 11, now let's remember, this is tradition 11, is hopefully what I just answered about the billboard. Promotion would be, come to AA, you're going to die if you keep drinking. Here's where we can help you to change your life. And attraction would be when you get to the meeting, an open meeting of Alcoholics Anonymous, as a non-alcoholic observer, maybe your group does a really good job giving an adequate presentation of what AA is and is not. Jimmy D, Southwest Regional Trustee, talks about Jack Alexander, back who wrote the Saturday Evening Post. And he says, you know, that Jack Alexander, he was looking to find something in AA, right? Schemes, people trying to take your money, predatory behavior, something, right? And so he went to a lot of meetings undercover, right? And so Jimmy says, and I love this, and I've been doing it ever since I first heard him say it about 4 years ago. He gets to his meeting and he sits down and he closes his eyes and he listens to the chatter, you know, around the room, to people pouring coffee, to Harvey talking to Greg about his new dog, you know, all that stuff. And he thinks, is this attraction? Would we be attractive to the new person? Or are we gossiping? Are we cursing? Are we talking about politics? Are we talking about, you know, I mean, what is it? And in an open meeting, that is the sole purpose of an open meeting.
Somebody is calling me out in the meeting, and I wasn't unmuted. It was somebody else. So I asked.
Deborah, my dear, you're still unmuted. We can hear you talking about me calling you out. I love you. Oh. It doesn't look like you're unmuted, but somehow you are.
Oh, thank you.
It's okay. But yeah, so that's, hopefully that answers the question.
Thank you. Yeah, that was weird.
I have another question. Okay. Concept 11 says paid well by commercial standards, not nonprofit. Understand IRS concerns, but can pay really high in nonprofit range, do we? So you can look up the IRS tax code and all the rulings by the service, and it's a very complicated puzzle. What I would tell you is this. There are certain penalties nonprofits have to pay if executives get paid above a certain level. I feel like we do pay very well, even compared to what somebody would get paid commercially. Not maybe the top salary commercially, but we pay very fair. And we do our compensation study, and we know how other nonprofits are paying. The truth is, in today's world, nonprofits have some of the best benefit packages of anybody out there. We still take very good care of our employees, their medical insurance. We keep the co-pays down. We make sure our retired employees have the ability to buy, you know, low cost health insurance before they're Medicare eligible. But I don't think we're going to ever pay, you know, not in a long time, $1 million a year to our general manager. But yet there are some executives we know in the world who run companies and divisions, and they make $1 million or even $500,000. So if you went back 30 years ago, the pay was probably closer to 100,000 than it was 250. And now the pay is probably, you know, up in the 2 to 3 range now, but we're talking about an executive who is in New York City. And we're also talking about, and this is also something that I just want to throw out there. Most of the AA staff members and the people who come to us as executives are all leaving jobs where they're taking a pay cut to come work for AA. They got paid more in the commercial. So we don't pay the highest in the commercial world. We don't pay the lowest. I think we pay a fair, livable wage. Thanks.
Thank you, Billy. You got anything else, Terry?
Oh, yeah. You want to make it gone?
Yeah, please.
I have
Billy, heard some get something in between.
Okay.
I've heard some members consider including the name of the speaker on online meeting flyers as promotion. I personally like knowing who the speaker is. How is it considered promotion within the fellowship? You know, again, you got to ask yourself why you're doing it. I have seen and even been on flyers where my name was the biggest print on the flyer. That might be promoting the name instead of the event. Whereas if my name is just in the information with the same size as the Zoom code, the passcode, all that, but the name of the event or, you know, traditions or the 12 steps or big book study or whatever is the name, then that's promoting the event. That's promoting AA, which Absolutely we do, which I just want to make super clear to everybody in the room. We absolutely promote within the fellowship. We promote the hell out of AA within AA. The attraction rather than promotion is to the outside world. We don't promote AA. But to each other, absolutely. We just don't try to promote the personality. We try to promote the event or the principle rather than the personality. Are there any specific mentions history-wise of hard lessons Bill went through from point A of breaking anonymity early on to point B of declining TAM magazine? Yes, dang it. And I'm not going to be able to pull that up. Yeah, I mean, Bill wasn't always like me. Bill didn't always buy into the whole, I need to maintain my personal anonymity at the public level. Bill was a self-promoter like the best of us. You know, it took a lot of self-restraint and a lot of, I think, just experience and a lot of group conscience, a lot of the group telling him, Bill, what are you doing? You know, and so, yeah, the later on years of Bill's writing is a little bit different than early on of Bill's writing when it comes to this.
Can I add something there?
Yeah.
I just want to talk about a story that's often misused regarding Bill W. and anonymity, and after he learned that he was no different than everyone else's. In July of 1969, Bill W. testified in front of a congressional hearing on alcoholism. Marty Mann testified, Bill did, a few others. Every once in a while, somebody will post a picture of Bill W. sitting at that hearing table. But that picture, when that hearing was opened up, you can read the congressional transcript. The chairperson said, cameras will only show the back of the witness's head. Some photographer took a picture and obviously released it. The hearing also does not mention his last name in the transcript and goes into great detail about why anonymity is so important. And that was in July of 1969. And sometimes you'll hear the anti-anonymity brigade say, oh, but Bill testified at Congress and they took his picture. No, somebody took his picture. That would be like, you know, the person who blasted me for my last name being on YouTube and I didn't post it there, you know. I just have to write the 100 notes to YouTube to get it taken down. But Bill learned a lot of lessons. As Carrie stated, he was the biggest self-promoter in the world and he had to put himself in check. And the board had to put him in check sometimes, not just himself.
Thanks, Billy. That was great. And then the last question I have, the one that I've had for a while that I haven't read because it was kind of longer is, I know that many people have an impression that AA does not advertise. Would you be willing to emphasize from the first paragraph of Tradition 11 in the 12 and 12, it is no exaggeration to say that half of our fellowship has been led to us through channels like these. Thanks for your talk. Well, I looked up in the 12 and 12, and yes, the first paragraph says that half of our fellowship has been led to us by channels like these. And then it gives an example. I read a piece in the newspaper, .. Another said we heard a radio program, .. Another still said we saw a moving picture, .. We saw something about AA on TV, .. So those are the examples. And yeah, that's not, I don't think that we consider that advertising because we're not saying AA will save your life. AA will make you better. AA, we're saying, we have something that worked for us. I don't know, but here's where you can find us. So it's more of an informational. So we don't cross the line into making promises or to tell people that we have something other than freedom from alcohol through the teaching and the practice of the 12 steps. And that's it. We don't say that we have freedom from drug addiction. We don't, in fact, we say that we know nothing about drug addiction. We know nothing about sex addiction. We know nothing about gambling addiction. We know nothing about getting better and, you know, going to heaven. We just know how to quit drinking. And if you have a problem with alcohol, here's our phone number. We're not shiny. We don't put lights on it. And so that's why we do CPC and PI, cooperating with the professional community, so that they know how to get people to us when somebody tells their pastor or their priest or their judge or their teacher or whatever that they might have a problem with alcohol. We want those people to be equipped with information to get them to us. And then that's why we also do things like public service announcements and billboards and shopping cart ads and bus station ads, so that if you need AA and if you want AA, you know where to find us. But we're not trying to advertise. We're not going to have a picture of some celebrity who is super cool because now he got sober on. That's what the tradition is talking about. That would be publicizing personalities. That would be promoting, you know, and that's what a lot of commercials do. They get super cool celebrities to promote their product. We don't do that. We just promote the principle of not drinking one day at a time, and here's how we did it.
Oh, thanks, Carrie. You guys got any more questions, or are we done?
I have 1 second.
Okay.
I have one. Is there any literature I could look into about Bill testifying? That was just the kind of info I was looking for. You know, if you Google Bill W. Congress, a lot of articles and magazine articles come up. It was mentioned in a box 459, but you could find it very easily. Yeah.
Thank you. Carrie, you got any more? That's it.
I'm good.
Okay, wonderful. Perfect. So thank you both. I want to thank you both again for being here with us for our 12th week now. Next week, everybody, is our 13th week, which will be tradition 12. So the person that asked about that anonymity in regards to someone's personal anonymity, please come back and you'll hear Carrie talk more on the personal anonymity in regards to that in tradition 12. And also we will be wrapping up this workshop next week with concept 12. So
just a reminder about American Sign Language. Just
absolutely. That's what I was just going
to say. Please
go
let
ahead,
your districts and areas and everybody know that, you know, a few people around the country did chip in some money so that we could have a professional interpreter, which is what the deaf members deserve, interpret the service manual study every week. And so please, if you can get the word out, please do, because it's just super important that everybody deserves to be a GSR or do the service they want to do in AA. And, we're going to great lengths to make that happen. So that's it. Thanks.
Thank you, Billy. And for those of you that didn't hear that in the beginning, so what Billy's referring to is the new service manual study that we've asked Billy to come back and do starting December 22nd. That is going to be on Wednesdays, not on Tuesdays, on Wednesdays, December 22nd, starting at 8 p.m. Eastern. So that's a pretty decent time for everybody across the U.S. and Canada to be able to attend. So, and if not, we will be recording it as well, but it will be ASL interpreted for those 13 weeks. So thank you all for being here with us this evening. And we're going to close with the responsibility statement. I am responsible when anyone, anywhere reaches out for help. I want the hand of AA always to be there. And for that, I am responsible. And thank you both again.
Thanks, Dee.